Oh, hi. My name's Klaatu, and this is the GNU World Order, Episode 0 of Season X. This is, of course, the first and possibly only season of the GNU World Order that has a video feed, video version. I figured for Season X, which of course is 10 in Roman numerals, I figured for this very special season I would go video because, well, I mean, I still have the audio feed, so if you're watching this, don't panic. The audio RSS feed still exists, and you can get this in audio only. But I thought that it might be kind of neat to play around with a video release for this season, simply because, well, first of all, because a couple of people did ask. Not a lot of people. It wasn't as if though there was a huge demand for it, but some people over the past 9 seasons had mentioned it to me, especially because when I'm doing random commands on the computer and reading them over the microphone and you're just listening to them, it's all really kind of neat to hear it and everything, and it sounds cool and elite and very advanced, but let's face it, it's a lot easier to follow along, especially with anything that involves a graphical user interface with a graphical representation of what you're doing. So this season I intend to be very heavy on the screen capturing, on the demos, and kind of showing you exactly what I do when I'm talking about different things. If you know anything about Slackware, and you may or you may not, but if you do, or whether you do or not, when you log in, every time you log into Slackware, assuming you don't have KDM coming up like right away, so you've got a text console turned on your computer, you're dumped into a text console, you get a fortune. You log in, you get a fortune. It's the default behavior of Slackware. Unless you skipped package Y, package set Y, I think it's Y, BSD-games, that's where fortune is. So if you skipped that, you don't get it, but otherwise you do get it. So a default install, you get it. So I thought it might be fun and interesting to see what happens if we did a daily fortune every time we do an episode. So I'm going to just type in fortune because I'm already logged in. And there we go. So the guru doesn't talk, he hacks. When his work is done, the users say, "Amazing, we implemented it all by ourselves." It's a good fortune, I like that one. Okay, now let's get to the first topic of the episode. Never let it be said that I shy away from controversy, because here it is, first topic of the first video episode of this series, and it's systemd. Some people are really just furious over it. I mean, there are literally websites popping up about forking Debian or boycotting systemd. People are threatening to switch away from Linux to BSD, which is strange because they kind of ignore that Slackware and Arch and Crux and Gentoo and all those other things either do not use systemd or do not impose systemd upon you. So it's kind of strange to sort of swing all the way over to one direction and say, okay, I'm going to switch to BSD now, ignoring that Linux still has things that aren't using systemd. But whatever. I mean, the point being that people are jumping ship from their home distribution, and they're pretty concerned about this. Now, before we delve into the fact that this is a controversial issue, or rather why this is a controversial issue, let's talk about it being a controversial issue. Because it's important to remember that this has actually happened before. You might have been around for it, might not have been, I don't know, but I mean, I can think of quite a few things that have happened in the past that are similar to systemd. If in some cases more less noisy, some cases about as noisy, but I mean, Debian, I remember, switched away from glibc at one point to avoid basically having to deal with its maintainer. FFmpeg, of course, got forked into AVConv, or libAV, and then the command that you have to use then is AVConv or something like that. And that puzzled me at the time. I mean, I understand why people would want to fork because of, I mean, like internal disputes and stuff. And I know that that's a thing, and sometimes you have to separate, you have to put distance between you just for sanity and stuff like that. But what really shocked me was how many distributions just suddenly switched. I mean, it was like, oh, a fork? Okay, well, let's default to the fork. But there have been others, and almost, I would say, as big as this. First of all, was the Mono thing. And I think there are two different aspects to that. There's Mono itself, like the language, the framework. Do we want that in Linux at all? And that was a hot topic. And people got very, very upset about that. And OpenSUSE signed an agreement with Microsoft to sort of an agreement that we won't sue you and we grant you permission to use this stuff. It was really bizarre. And there was the ridiculous, did I say ridiculous? I meant there was the website boycott OpenSUSE or something like that. Boycott Novell, I think. Weird stuff, you know? I mean, just weird. I mean, the term boycott, first of all, I know that they're not using it literally, obviously, because you can't boycott things that you download for free. I mean, that's not a boycott, is it? I don't know. Maybe it is. But anyway, that site existed. Either way, those are situations that I could think of off just the top of my head that are a little bit similar to the systemd situation that we're in now. So it's not unprecedented. Now, it's important to understand, and this is a difficult thing to understand, and it's a difficult thing to even talk about, but the truth is that open source is not a democracy. I'm not even going to get into my thoughts on the concept of democracy anyway, and whether it actually exists in reality at all right now. But open source is not a democracy. Its only guarantee, really, is that you can take the source code of something and walk away with it. That's what open source guarantees. Linux and open source in general is participatory. So if you want to contribute something, you can. If they're not welcome, if people don't like your contributions, which is, I mean, they may not, they're free not to like your contributions, then open source, once again, it basically just, it guarantees that you can fork something, or that you can, you know, contribute just to yourself. You can just use the code on your own. You don't have to necessarily, you know, if other people don't want it, you don't have to, they don't have to use it. You can still use it. So open source is not something really that we vote on. You know, it's not something that we collect everyone's opinion and try to distill it into something. And there is a command structure to an open source project. And I think that there should be, which is weird because I'm really, really into the ideals of anarchy, but, you know, there's this difference between just, you know, having a whole crowd decide something, and then the whole crowd saying, okay, there's going to be one person whose project we recognize is running this project, and that person is going to have the final say in the matter. And that's how open source generally, I mean, there are exceptions to every rule, but that's generally how open source works. There's that person who does make the final call. Who they may hear the opinions, they may not. It just depends. But there's no guarantee that your opinion or your request will be heard. There is a guarantee that you can have a request and have an opinion and take the source code and make that happen for yourself. That's about it. Systemd, for instance, really is not something that we're going to be able to vote on. It's not something that people are asking, hey, what does everyone think? Should we implement systemd or not? I think the controversy about systemd, once you get once you clear away all of the noise, and there is a lot of noise out there, but I think the controversy, if you really, really distill it, boils down to three different things. So the first thing is that it's bad, systemd is bad, because it violates the Unix philosophy. The second thing is that it's bad because it's trying to entrap us. And then the third thing is that it's technically inferior. There are alternate solutions that do the same thing better. So let's look at each of those things on their own. So the first one, it's bad because it violates the Unix philosophy. You know I'm a big fan of the Unix philosophy. I'm all about the Unix philosophy. It's one of the primary reasons that I use Slackware, because Slackware is famously the most Unix of the Linuxes. That's its goal. That's its stated goal. You can go to the website, read the about me or something, and it'll say right there, it aims to be as Unix-like as possible. I do like the Unix philosophy. Now, systemd, first of all, is not technically as monolithic as its very vocal opponents claim. There's a blog post that explains this from Lennart Potering, and it's important at least to look at that blog post and to read other commentary about it, because a lot of people, I think, really do actually believe that everything that systemd does is a monolithic process, and it's not. So be aware of that, because if you go around saying things like, oh, it violates the Unix philosophy, then you really do, you're obligated to get into a debate of what the Unix philosophy is exactly. And that's a difficult debate to get into for a Linux user, because you and I, this computer right here in front of me, and the one behind me, and the one over there, are all running a monolithic kernel. The Linux kernel is not something that honors the Unix philosophy. There was a very, very famous / infamous debate about this very topic. It was between Linus Torvalds and Tannenbaum. I don't remember his first name. Sorry, Mr. Tannenbaum. Professor Tannenbaum. The Minix guy. So the guy who developed Minix, which, of course, Linus sort of based a lot of his work on, or learned from enough so that he could do Linux, is it a good idea to be monolithic like that? And Tannenbaum was saying that it really wasn't, that it should be more modular. Yeah, Linux, I mean, if you compile the kernel, what do you have? You get a single a.out file, right? It's called vmlinux, or compressed vmlinux, but that's a single file. That's monolithic right there. You don't get much more monolithic than something that ends up with one single binary, I guess. I don't know. Maybe you do. But the point being that there is, you know, if you start talking about Linux, Unix philosophy and Linux, you do have some things to explain. So be careful when arguing that. What systemd is, though, even if it's not technically as monolithic as people say it is, it's very, very intertwined. And I do feel like it's a little bit disingenuous to not acknowledge or to concede that. You know, I mean, for anyone to say, well, it's not monolithic, and see how modular systemd actually is, and not to even admit that it is by design pretty darned sort of interwoven with a lot of other technologies that would make it potentially difficult to kind of separate them out, you know, and just say, okay, I'll just take that piece from systemd and then I'll just use everything else over here. Not to, yeah, I mean, it's not dishonest, but it's a little bit disingenuous, I feel. So, yeah, I think systemd does violate the Unix philosophy. I don't know if there's exactly a question about that, really. I think at the end of the day, people are going to say, yeah, it violates the Unix philosophy. But also at the end of the day, I think people are going to have to ask themselves, and we have to ask ourselves, do we care? Like, at what point do we stop caring so much about the Unix philosophy? And you do have to admit that at some point, you you do stop caring. You know, I mean, there are things that you don't want to have to string together yourself, and there are things that you just don't care about. It just happens to violate the Unix philosophy. But hey, it sure is convenient. I just thought, like in my head, well, K3B, the application K3B, if you've ever used it, it does all kinds of things. It rips, it burns, it images, it does lots of cool things. And I was thinking, see how monolithic that is, but actually it uses a bunch of smaller tools underneath it to accomplish all of those things, and you can actually see which ones it's invoking after you start the processes. So, I don't know, bad example. Even so, we do violate Unix philosophies every day, perfectly willing to do it. We do it happily, and it makes life convenient for us, and so we ignore the fact that it's destroying everything that we hold close and dear to our hearts. But it's not just about systemd, right? It's not just about, well, certainly not just about the Unix philosophy, but it's also not just about systemd. That's not the only thing that people are afraid of or are mistrustful over. One of the real fears, I think, I'm gathering, is the fear of, well, what happens if my favorite app starts to depend on systemd? And that's scary to people, because people in Linux love to have choices. That's, like, probably one of the top five reasons that people decide to go to Linux at all, is the freedom to choose the technology that they do or they do not use. I mean, that's huge. It's in the Linux world, that is huge. And once again, it's dangerous to trample on that. And I think people are really afraid that it is going to be trampled over. I mean, sure, if let's just say that GNOME, even. I was going to say something smaller, but I mean, let's just say GNOME itself depends on systemd. I mean, it might. I don't know. I don't think it does. No, it doesn't yet. But let's say that it starts, you know, it does at some point magically depend on systemd. Then obviously most of us would just write off GNOME. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. Linux Mint wrote it off ages ago and has developed probably one of the nicer, I would say, one of the nicer desktops for Linux, Cinnamon. I mean, it's a great user experience. It is exactly, I mean, it's everything that GNOME 2 was, only better, and everything that GNOME 3 is, only more pragmatic. So, yeah, GNOME, losing GNOME, I don't think for a lot of people would really be that big of a deal. But what if X, or Wayland, or whatever's next, Wayland, I think, right? What if that started to depend on systemd? What if you couldn't get a GUI without systemd? Now, that scares people. I mean, that scares me. That's a scary thought, that something within open source would start to be so intertwined that we stop being able to use technologies without that other technology. And this does happen a little bit. Not exactly. I have not actually had this happen to me personally, but I did note that Skype 4.3, which is not open source in no way, so in a sense, it's not happening at all. But Skype does, I think, depend on Pulse Audio. And Slackware doesn't ship with Pulse Audio. And I'm certainly not going to install Pulse just for Skype. I mean, I'm not going to install Skype at all. But if I was, I wouldn't use Pulse. But then I wouldn't be able to use Skype. And if I'd had a contact list on Skype of a bunch of people, you know, who actually talked to me and contacted me over Skype, then that would be a problem for me. And that's not cool. And again, that's not exactly a perfect example either, because Skype is not open source. So, I mean, the poor decisions of something of a company that delivers something only as a pre-compiled binary, you can't really lump that in as an example, I guess. So, all right, that's not fair. And I mean, there are other things out there that have options for Pulse and that I do use on Linux, on Slackware, and you just compile it without Pulse support, and it's not that big of a deal. I guess the fear here is that someone's going to turn those things off, you know, or not give you the option to turn them off. You know, like when you're compiling it, you should be able to just say, well, we'll compile it dash dash without dash pulse equals true or something like that. And or without dash system D equals true or something like that. And that'll work. But the fear, I think, is that that won't exist, that that won't be an option in open source, and that you'd have to go in and completely reprogram it or something. You know, it's, I think that's one of the major fears, is that it's trying to get us all in and trap us into its little worldview of how things should work. So what if that did happen, if we all got entrapped? I mean, obviously, people are already talking about jumping ship, go to a different distribution, go to BSD, whatever. You could fork X or Wayland. Honestly, I know that X or Wayland are huge technologies, and I realize that forking would be a huge undertaking. But honestly, if you had told me before GNOME 3, if you'd told me that someone would fork GNOME, I would have laughed. I'd have just... it's ridiculous. You can't just fork an entire desktop that has like this huge group of people working on it, and suddenly you've got Cinnamon and Mate and Unity, if you want to call that a GNOME fork. I kind of think of it as a GNOME fork, not that it is, but I mean it's taking GNOME-ic technology and doing new stuff with it in order essentially to avoid GNOME. So it's a GNOME fork. So I think that if systemd did get its tendrils into lots and lots of different technologies, I have enough faith in the open source technology, honestly, that someone would find a way out of that. It would be a pity, you know, if we had to fork X or Wayland in order to avoid an init system. That would be really, really bad. And it would be back to the days of X11 versus X386. Or whatever, but I mean, it's possible. It is something that could happen, you know. So there are options. The other fear, the final fear that I'm detecting in people when they talk about systemd, is that it's just plain technically inferior to existing technologies. And I have to admit, when I started reading about systemd and how it was kind of making its way into a lot of different distributions. I mean, initially it was just a Fedora thing, and it's just a Fedora thing. And then, of course, Ubuntu had their Upstart, and again, that was just an Ubuntu thing. And then they surrendered Upstart and said, okay, we're going to systemd. And then OpenSUSE goes systemd, and then Debian goes systemd. Lots of different... Debian went systemd, and then Ubuntu dropped Upstart. But point being, a lot of the major distributions just started rolling systemd right in. And I do remember asking myself why exactly we were having this. Like, who exactly was calling for systemd? Or more precisely, who was calling out for a better init system? Like, I couldn't understand exactly where that need came from, because I certainly never, ever, ever in my entire Linux using career, and that's been 9 seasons of this show now, so hasn't been exactly a season, a year, but give or take, I mean, it's been a while, and I never, ever thought, wow, this boot up sequence process really needs to change. I've never thought that in my entire life. I never, ever thought that. In fact, I've been very, very happy with the boot up process of Linux for a lot of different reasons. It's transparent, it's effective, and it's verbose. That for me, that was pretty much all I wanted. So I'm happy with the init system. I've always been happy with it. So I'm not sure who was asking for systemd. Like, I really don't quite get it. Now, I will admit, something like Pulse Audio, even though, I mean, don't get me wrong on Pulse Audio, I don't use it, mainly because I don't do real, I do use it, I'm sorry, I use it on the machines that come with it installed. In real life, like in my day-to-day work, Slackware, I do not use Pulse, and that's where I do all my production work. So I don't use Pulse, like, really. I don't use it as a professional, you know, a pro user. I use it as just a normal user. And Pulse started out really, really rocky. It was bad. And what made it, I think, even worse was that people started shipping Pulse way before Pulse was ready to be shipped with. You expect that sort of thing from Fedora, not so much from other distributions. And it started popping up in distributions, I think, way before it was ready to be shipped as the new default. That said, the things that Pulse delivers are very nice, and you can really, really... I mean, people were calling, and sometimes still call, for a better sound system on Linux. So the existence and the benefits of Pulse, I get that. I mean, without Pulse, you can launch Audacity, and, you know, if you have, let's say you're in Qtractor, you launch Audacity, and suddenly you can't, like, there's a conflict. Audacity can't play sound, and Qtractor stops playing sound, or maybe just Audacity doesn't play. Either way, there's a definite conflict. I mean, nowadays, you just switch over to Jack and play Audacity through Jack, and you're okay, but again, that's Jack. So without Pulse, there's a conflict. With Pulse, you bring them both up, they both work. It's a really, really slick and obvious change. Systemd, I don't know. I mean, does it really deliver anything totally new? I'm not sure. I mean, yes, obviously it does. But, I mean, is it something that you or I are going to actually notice as a benefit? Probably not. Is it something that you or I are going to identify as something getting in our way? No. I don't think so. Sorry. I know you wanted to hear me say yes. A lot of you did. I have to be honest here. I mean, I'm keenly aware that I'm in a unique position. I'm here smugly using Slackware for all my real world everyday Linux usage, and I'm very comfortable in my place far apart from Pulse and Systemd and all these other things that you're going through. But don't be mistaken. I've been through this myself. I have been down this road, not with my init system. Not with my init system, but with desktop technologies. KDE 4 I loved from the very start. I was never a KDE person before 4, to be honest. So that wasn't the big conflict. The big conflict came when Nepomuk started getting its way into KDE. There was, again, sort of open source faux democracy style. People were begging KDE devs to stop putting Nepomuk in their desktop. I mean, really, people were really, really upset about Nepomuk. I was not too happy about Nepomuk either, if we're being honest. Nepomuk is probably the technology that drove me away from Kmail, to be honest. But at the same time, and this is important, Nepomuk was trying to accomplish something. And I don't know the developer personally. I never met him. I don't know if he feels that Nepomuk succeeded or if it failed. I don't know his feelings on the subject. What I do know is that without Nepomuk, I really kind of doubt if we would have Baloo right now. Baloo, if you're not a KDE person, is the brand new, like I think as of 4.13, it's the brand new sort of indexing system. And man, is it good. I mean, I guess what I really mean is that it is not getting in my way. It's not something that I actually use, but it is something that works. I mean, if you go KDE 4.13 and you launch Dolphin, and you can see, like, you can look just at all the video files or just the music files or the pictures or whatever, or at the most recently created ones, you know, I mean, all kinds of different things that you can do. And that's all because of Baloo, which is the indexer for the desktop, which really would not exist probably if it hadn't been for Nepomuk. So yes, there was a bumpy road there. There was a bumpy road with Pulse. It was growing pains for sure. But it does tend to work itself out. And that would be my first message to people who are afraid of systemd. These things have a tendency of kind of working their ways into stability and into being a lot more comfortable. I'm not involved with systemd at all. I'm not developing it. I don't know the people involved with it. I only use it on systems that ship with it. But what I will say is that I'm kind of doubting that the true goal here is to entrap everyone into a system that removes all the control from the user. And I think that is kind of, ultimately, for a Linux user, that's the scariest part about it. The user wants to have full control over what they use and how they use it. Now, I've created systemd scripts before. They're actually no more complex than systemv or BSD style init scripts. They're actually really, really easy to make. If you want to get really technical about it, in some ways they're even easier to make, because you don't have to do a lot of you don't have to program in the fault, you know, the error catching and all that other stuff, the stop and the start and the restart commands. It's just that all kind of happens for you through systemd. So it can be actually quite simple, and I will show you that at some point. I will show you how to make your very own systemd script. It is not hard. So I think, I feel like a lot of people who are really, really concerned about systemd are concerned partly because they haven't gone through the trouble of learning how to do a systemd script. So they think, well, this is the worst thing in the world because I don't have my rc.local anymore, or I can't make my rc.whatever. And actually, you still can. It's really, really simple. So in terms of learning new technology, it's not that bad, and it's worth checking out, because it makes systemd a lot less scary if you can just write your own init scripts for it, because that's what you really want to do with an init system, right? I mean, that's, as far as users go, that's the thing that we want to do. Obviously, you also want to keep in mind that systemd, while you might not like parts of it, a lot of those parts can be made redundant, really. Like, if you don't like the binary journals, you can run a syslogger on it separately, so that you can do it that way. And there are a lot of things that people keep saying, oh, well, systemd is going to remove this. I'm never going to be able to do, you know, this thing because of systemd. And I'm betting that a lot of that stuff is not true. That the fear that you're not going to be able to do something, there's going to be an allowance for it. Someone's going to need that functionality, and they're going to develop it. You can, you know, a lot of the conspiracy theories about systemd, and probably ultimately my feeling about systemd, I mean, it's a Red Hat technology, right? It's something being paid for. People are being paid to work on systemd, and it's going to ship with Red Hat, and that's it. That's all you can do about it. But I mean, think of all the other people, like the Debian guys. There's no corporate reason for them to go with systemd. Of all people, Debian, you know, there's no real like advantage for Debian to go with systemd, other than apparently some of the developers in Debian think that it's a pretty good idea. You can disagree, but I mean, there's obviously some people who do like systemd and who can work with it, and it's not destroying their lives. So you can work with it, and it doesn't have to destroy your life. So all of this analysis gives us kind of the bottom line of, personally, me, Klaatu, I'm not convinced that System D is necessary. I don't intend to use it anytime soon for real-life stuff. But I'm also not convinced yet that it's necessarily a bad thing. Because it honestly, it has yet to interfere with anything that I actually do. And like I say, I don't use it on my multimedia systems. It's an init system. I really don't think it would affect my multimedia work either way. But on my other systems, for all the different things that I do, including Raspberry Pi, Systemd it's never gotten in my way. It's gotten in my way for like 10 seconds one time, and then I looked up how to write a script, an init script, and it was really easy, and I moved on with my life. So I think that in order to look at Systemd for yourself, I think you need to kind of look at your life. This is starting to sound like a self-improvement episode or something. But really, you need to look at your life and see if Systemd is actually blocking something. If you have real-world examples of how something that you want to do is being stopped by Systemd, then send something to Systemd's mailing list. So say, file a bug, whatever. But make it a real example. I think that's really the main thing that's been hurting the whole debate about Systemd. Because I'm totally open to the debate. Because I'm not, like I say, I'm not using it. I don't intend to use it. I probably won't use it in real life until Patrick Volkerdien says that Slackware is shipping with it. You know, I mean, I never needed a new init system. I'm completely happy with what I have. I have no complaints. And again, that said, I have no complaints about System D either. Point is that if I did have a complaint about System D, it would be an actual thing that I was trying to do. I think that's really the important thing, is to identify an actual task that is being made impossible by Systemd, and not theoretical. I'm talking, you sat down at your computer, you tried to do something, whether it's like sending syslogs to some other partition or some other network during boot time, before DHCP exists, I don't know, whatever. Make it something that actually, you know, that you are trying to do, that you could do with Systemv or BSD style inits. That system, I mean, did I say, yeah, System V, Sys 5, or BSD style inits, versus System D, and System D is making it impossible for you to do. And do your searching, you know, do your online searching and make sure that you're not overlooking something. Like I said, for about 10 seconds one day, I thought System D had finally done it. It had screwed me over, because there was no more rc.local. There was supposed to be. Supposedly, RC local, I think, still gets invoked by Systemd for compatibility, but I couldn't get it to work. But then I just wrote my own script, and it took me like 20 seconds, and it was all back to being normal again. So don't debate unless you know what it is, you know, unless you're actually debating something, because otherwise you're creating a lot of noise, and this should be a technical debate, honestly. This should be a completely technical discussion. Like I say, I love the Unix philosophy as much as the next guy, but at some point, you as just a user, because if you're a developer, you've got a completely different set of arguments, and if you want to argue that the HTTP server that has to kick in order for journal CTL to work, I have not verified that in the code, that's just what I read online. If you want to argue about that on a code level, go for it, but hopefully you're not doing it like on linuxquestions.org or social medias. Hopefully you're doing that actually on the mailing list or at a conference or something. But if you're a user, at some point you have to surrender your right to the Unix philosophy. And you have to admit absolutely have to admit, I mean, with all, like, as with all philosophical debates, there's a point where we're all basically hypocrites, right? I mean, yes, I love the Unix philosophy. And yes, I'm ashamed to say it, but I use Firefox, which is this hugely monolithic web browser, when all I really need is wget and, that's probably it, wget, or just FTP. I mean, HTTP itself is not part of the Unix philosophy, right? I mean, that's like the fanciest, most ridiculous, useless technology ever. We should all really just be using FTP. So yeah, I mean, there, you know, you can just go down this that dangerous path of, well, I'm more pure to the Unix philosophy than you are, and I mean, apt. Think about apt. Apt is a hugely non-Unix philosophied application. So is yum. Probably yum more than apt, but still apt. I guess. Databases are not Unix, right? I mean, it should all be plain text files. You get my point. So at some point, you have to kind of just write off stuff. At some point, you have to take things on faith, you know? And I have faith that my kernel is going to recognize all of my equipment and boot my computer. And then I have faith that some init system, and I don't care which one it is, some init system is going to start processes and let me use my computer and possibly continue to monitor them and write journals in binary formats, but I digress. So me as a user, I'm not much of a systemd debater, I guess, because this is open source, and you have to remember the one truth in open source more than anything is that talk is cheap. Just like our fortune today said, you don't be a user, be a guru and make the change. You can debate systemd until you're blue in the face. What really matters is sitting down and doing something about it. If you're against it, stop talking and solve your problem. That's open source. So those are my thoughts on systemd. To sum up, I don't use systemd, but neither do I care about it. And if you do, you should change it. Okay, I hope that you got yourself a cup of coffee during that coffee break. Two more things to go on this episode. One is the Noob Corner, which last season I kind of said, I'm going to make that a thing. And so here it is. It is going to be a regular feature this season for sure, because, I mean, again, that's kind of why I'm doing this video thing, so that we can actually see things on the screen. So in this Noob Corner today, I would like to talk about killing. Of course, I mean killing applications, killing processes, really. So we've all used computers long enough to know that sometimes applications crash. And there are about, I don't know, 4 or 5 or 6 different ways to kill an application. So I want to go over each of the different ways that you can do that on Linux. And there are a few different ways, some that will involve the terminal, and some that will involve a graphical interface. So let's turn to the screen. I should probably have like an animation or something to make the screen like zoom into you or something. But let's cut to the screen and kill some applications.
So the first way to kill an application that you don't want to have running right now is, as I think I said, within the terminal, and that would be with the command, not this, would be in the command pgrep. Actually, I'm really meant to do that. Pgrep. So pgrep tells you it's sort of a process grep. looks up the signal processes based on something. So if we say sleep for 45 seconds, and we'll send that to the background, actually it just told us the process right there, but this will be good proof for you. So pgrep sleep, and you get the process ID. And then you should be able to kill that process by telling it to kill that process, except that I used the wrong command, which is just kill 6329. So now if we pgrep sleep again, as you can see, it's not actually, it doesn't have a process anymore, it's been terminated. So we could probably do that in a much more graphical sense with XEyes, for instance. So here's some eyeballs on the screen, and we know the process now, so we could, but we'll still do it just for practice. So we know that it's XEyes, so there's the 6357, so if we say kill 6357, it kills it. So that's kind of a simple way. Let's get XEyes back up here. Now there's another cool little application called XKill. And as you can see, XKill gives you this little skull and crossbone logo icon. And you might not have this installed on your system. You may have to install this, but it happens to be installed. So if I drag the skull and crossbones over the eyes, I click, it just killed it. So that's another great way to kill processes. So one more way to do this, we can do XEyes again. Here's the eyeballs again. And now we'll go up to the KDE process or system activity thing. And this is just basically a graphical, really nice graphical representation of all the different things that you would see in TOP or HTOP or whatever you use. But in short, it's stuff that's running. It's pretty overwhelming, as you can see. There's a lot of stuff in here. And actually, I just when I was about to say you couldn't find XEyes in all this, I just found it. But let's say that we hadn't found it just now. And if I say, okay, I know that I want to kill XEyes, then I could go here. There's XEyes, and now if you notice, here's this big end button, and I can press the end button. It asks me if I'm sure I want to kill the thing, and I'm sure, and it dies. So those are the three ways of killing applications. XEyes, no, not XEyes, kill, well, pgrep, and kill, XKill, and the system monitor, which will differ depending on the desktop. So hopefully that helps.
And that's killing applications. Those are a couple of the different ways. I'm sure there are other ways. I know that there are other ways, but those are the ways that I find myself doing it or have seen other people do it. So I hope that helps. If you're new to Linux, or if you're just new to killing applications, then that might be useful for you. Let's do another demo now. This time, it's going to be not for noobs. It's going to be for other users. And this one is systemd. So I've just talked for like an hour about systemd and how much I don't hate it, but don't love it either. And the most important thing in life, I think, I mean, this is probably one of my mantras or something, but I never like to hear the word that I can't do that. That's not a word, that's a sentence. I don't like that at all. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I use Linux, is because in Linux, that phrase doesn't really ever have to exist. So when I hear people talk like that in Linux, I get, it makes me want to do something about that. And it should, you too. Like, if you're sitting there huddled in a corner, feeling trapped and alone because of systemd, then get up, go to your computer, and learn either a different init system and swap it out. You know, don't use systemd, use something else. Or learn systemd. I mean, it may very well surprise you. You might actually like it, and you might find that being more familiar with it makes you a lot less sort of resentful towards it.
So I've booted into a Fedora live image because I did need a computer or an OS with systemd on it. So here we are in Fedora, and I'll become root because this is all root type of process. And I'm going to use a text editor, which Emacs doesn't exist on the live image for some reason, so we'll use nano. And /etc/systemd/system. And if I do a couple of tabs, you'll see that there are a bunch of other files in there, some .service files and .wants directories. So those are all kind of standard issue systemd stuff. So we're going to create our own, and we'll call it foo.service. And this is a pretty simple script, to be honest. I think you're going to be a little bit surprised. There are three sections to a bare-bones systemd script. There's the unit section, there's the service section, and there's the install section. So in the unit, it's just a description. You can just tell it, you know, this is human-readable, kind of just telling other people what this thing is for. So we're just going to say that this is the GNU World Order sample script. There you go. Now the service, we want to define the type of service. This is an init service, so that's what we call it. It's a type equals init. I don't know what other kinds of services there are, and you could certainly argue that there shouldn't in an init system be any other kind of service. That's probably not a debate for this demo, though, so it's a valid debate, but it's not for this demo. So we're just going to say type equals init. That's all I've ever written. That's all I really know about. And then we need it to do something. So when this service gets called by systemd, what do we want it to do? Well, this might be looking a lot like a desktop file to you, and that's kind of all it is, at least in my mind. So we'll have to create this in a minute, but we'll tell it when systemd calls upon this service to exist or to get initialized, call this script /user/local/bin/foo.sh. And then the install section has a wanted by line, and that is just kind of so that systemd knows when to start this thing. And right now we are telling it only start this init script if the user is booting into the multi-user mode, which typically a user is. That's pretty common. With all that done, we're actually finished. Told you it was easy. So we'll write that out as a file, and we'll get out of nano. And then, of course, we want to make sure that systemd can actually execute this thing, so we'll chmod it to 755. And then, as I said, we do need to create this dummy shell script that we want systemd to execute, or rather, we want foo.service to execute. And, oh, it looks like I already had an example in there. Well, that's great, because, yes, that was my intention. I'm just going to keep it really simple. /bin/sh, echo hello world into /temp/test. Let's do test.foo, just to make sure we don't have anything left over from previous attempts. So we'll save that as foo.sh. I'm going to take a look at my example one more time just to make sure we're not forgetting anything. It looks like everything is correct. We probably, again, just want to make sure that... Let's just do this. I think it's already executable, but let's just make sure. Now it is. And now we can call our new script with system control, or system CTL, whatever. And you do that by just telling it to enable the service. And there we go. Now the thing is running. And we should, in theory, be able to get a status on that, but I don't remember how to do that. Oh, there we go. So it is loaded. And, well, it it's active, except it's not inactive. It's not active right now because it's not actually something that needs to continue to run. I doubt that it actually took, yeah, it didn't actually do the thing that we told it to do, because we're not running the thing. We're just saying, hey, enable this service. Whether or not that actually runs the service, usually, you know, since it's an init script, it doesn't run it right now. If I rebooted, well, this is a virtual machine, so it wouldn't do anything, but in theory, if I rebooted, it would then find this marked as an init script, it would launch it, and then the file would exist. To kind of call your attention to this line right here, there's your little description from the unit thing. So that's how that knows, you know, to describe people to the user what the service does.
And that's literally it. I mean, I wish I could say more, but that's actually all there is to it. That is the extent of creating your own systemd script. Not as scary as you might have imagined, and not at all disempowering. I mean, it's easy. You can do this. So don't be afraid of systemd. If you hate it on a technical level and have a real reason for hating it, do that. Hate it. But hate it with a reason and work to hack around it so that you don't have to be bothered by it anymore. And that's a big disclaimer. If I'm the sucker just sitting in the pot of water as it slowly, slowly boils and everything is about to be taken away out of my control, I'm sorry. But it being open source, I'm not too concerned about it, to be honest. So, yeah, that's systemd. That's killing applications. And welcome to video.
Okay, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening, as always. My name is Klaatu. You can find me online at GNUWorldOrder.info. or at slackermedia.info. You can find me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation, .org. And you can also find me on linuxquestions.org as not Klaatu. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.